Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is showtime. Please welcome the team of the Fulhamish Podcast.
It's the Fulhamish Podcast, your independent voice of Fulham FC. My name is George Cooper and welcome to the show on a chilly Sunday afternoon at Craven Cottage. Fulham were unable to get the monkey off their back. A win against Liverpool, which has been oh so elusive to us this season. Proof that you just simply cannot switch off for a second against this team as they cruised to a 3-1 victory. We've got plenty to cover in this podcast. Not the result that we wanted, but there is still some cause for optimism as we enter in the final straight of the season. With me today is Mr. Jack Kelly.
Hello, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you, Jack. And we had a few dropouts with it being a Monday recording, so we're kind of scraping the bottom of the barrel in terms of Fulhamish contributors. So one guy that you can always rely on in the time of need, Mr. Sammy James is with us. How are you doing?
Thank you, yes. Delighted to be very much the bottom of the barrel. But I thought you were going to say there, and I was really excited for it, that it was proof that you can't always get what you want.
I should do a re-record.
I just thought that was where you were going, and I was like, "Wow, oh, he's nearly done it." Oh, anyway, I've given you the assist. We can maybe we can re-record it at the end of the podcast.
Good do. They actually played. You can't always get what you want on the tannoy above the Pamiens before kickoff, which was a really nice touch, I thought. So yeah, thanks to the whoever is in charge of the playlist at Fulham. Nice work. Really did enjoy that. And also with us is Abbas Malik. How are you doing?
I'm very well, thanks, George. How's it going?
Yeah, not too bad. I believe you've got some three-word reviews for us, if you wouldn't mind.
Yeah, we've got a couple of different themes to them from last night. So Jack and Law's friend of the pod with Tossingly didn't matter, like totally didn't matter, which I liked. Daniel, hashtag FFC with tossing and turning. TJ with chestnuts and roasted. And kind of my sentiment after the game, Lewis, who's at LWB0611 with Jota, load of crap, which I thought was quite funny.
Yeah, it was a disappointing afternoon, should we say. It just felt like, I don't know, going into the game, Sammy, we were having a chat. It just felt like this was the time, you know. Liverpool have been off form of late. We've got nothing to play for. We should be playing with no pressure, whereas Liverpool have got it all. And then ultimately, we just never really came close. How would you sum up your feelings after yesterday's game and performance?
Yeah, I think maybe in hindsight, took Liverpool a little bit for granted in the build up. And Liverpool have this way of, like, considering everything that Liverpool have achieved in the last kind of 5 years under Klopp, where I go into games against Man City and always say no chance, absolutely no chance we'll get anything out of Man City, because they just kind of have this awe of invincibility about them. But I always, every time we've ever played Liverpool, I've always thought, got a chance today, don't know why. And I think that sometimes Liverpool can lure you in with this false sense of security. And you saw the kind of recent results. You saw the draw at Old Trafford, and then the loss to Palace, and then what happened in the Europa League against Atalanta. And maybe you thought, oh, okay, this Fulham team have upset Arsenal, Spurs, Man United this season. Can we do it? But actually, Klopp made the five changes. And for most of this game, I think after the match, I was like, oh, Fulham actually did well in spells. But actually, watched the highlights again, listened to a little bit of analysis, read up some match reports, and was like, actually, we were just fully and squarely second best yesterday. That isn't a massive thing to be worried about or concerned about. Like, this is Liverpool at the end of the day. There were some poor individual performances, but also Liverpool are the kind of team that make players look bad because the intensity of their press, and it was executed perfectly yesterday. And so, like, we'll come on to players like Iwobi and Tosin who had poor games. Don't get me wrong, it cannot be excused, but like, Liverpool have that ability to make players look bad because they give you no time on the ball. And it was kind of like prime Klopp Liverpool performance yesterday. And, you know, had they just put in a few more of those against United, against Palace, they'd probably be winning the league.
Yeah, no, I totally second that. It's just so dynamic a team. You look at every single player, you do the sort of like the matchup, and you just think that not only to like 90% of their players have the ability to score an absolute screamer out of nowhere, but they're all so mobile and so dynamic. And as you said, that press is just, it's relentless. And we just could not break it. They had our number from the word go. Jack, we had only one change going into the match. Willian taking a step out of the team. We believe he picked up a minor muscular injury beforehand. We had Bobby Decker-Dover-Reed come in to replace him on the left. He was also given the captain's armband, which I thought was a really nice touch. Really happy to see that. I mean, I love Bobby Decker-Dover-Reed. I'm sure I speak for everyone in that. So it's really nice to see him get the nod for his sort of, his long tenure at the club. Were there any surprises for you at all in the way that we set up? Did you think that Marco got the tactics right? It did seem that we were quite happy to sort of sit back and try and absorb Liverpool pressure. And whenever we did regain possession, we either quickly lost it for the press or errors were forced. Is there anything that you would have done differently?
Not really, no. I don't think that at half-time I had zero complaints about how we had played or how we had sort of brought the game to Liverpool or they brought the game to us and how we sort of reacted to that. I thought that we were trying to sort of play on the break, bide our time, let them have the ball. I thought we maybe gave them a little bit too much respect in that first half. And in fact, in the second half, we basically just could not get the ball whatsoever. But I was fairly pleased. It's bizarre because I was trying to think earlier, when was the last time that a player has scored a free kick home and away against the same team in the same season? Trent Alexander-Arnold with a really good free kick. I think we made it too easy for them to have those opportunities. Paulinho was way too erratic in his tackling, got himself booked. That's why he was brought off in the second half. But actually, in the first half, I thought we were good value for a 1-1 scoreline. However, they took the game away from us in the second half and we weren't at the races at all. It reminded me of the semi-final a little bit, where we just didn't quite get going at times. But I thought the first half performance was pretty decent against a team in Liverpool who are trying to, you know, win a title and reply after a defeat to Palace and going out of the Europa League. But it was difficult to have the ball. It was difficult to keep the ball. Their press was intense. They could have scored more in that first half and we maybe got away with a couple of things, but you know, to hang on in there and get the 1-1 goal with Castagna was encouraging. But the second half, they completely took the game away from us. And you know what? It's disappointing. And like Sammy said, there was individual performances that I was concerned about. But this is a Liverpool team who, for years, have done what they do, and they do it very well. They press well. They score good goals. They scored some insane goals against us this season. It's almost unfair, but good tenacity from Fulham to get back in the game before halftime.
Yeah, I was chatting to Sammy. We had a beer after the match and it was just like, can they just have a day off? Honestly, yeah. What is it with Liverpool? And just they always score absolute screamers against us. And the first of which was, of course, that Trent Alexander-Arnold free kick. I mean, Avas There was a few people saying that it was Paulinho, wasn't it, who gave away the free kick. A few people had some complaints about the officiating. They thought it was the standard top six bias, as we have undoubtedly seen. But upon watching the replay, I think it was fair enough. But I mean, Bernardo's not getting anywhere near that, is he?
No, I mean, I watched that from the Riverside stand, and it was definitely a really bad tackle by Paulinho. And as Jack was saying, he'd been a bit erratic literally 3 minutes before for that really hilarious Harvey Elliott free kick that he just passed it into the wall. But that Trent free kick, you knew he lined it up. You just knew he was going to challenge Leno. And when you watch it back, that hit top bins perfectly. And people are questioning online whether Leno was poorly positioned, but I don't think anyone saves that free kick. That is just how you take a free kick in that area. Banged at top corner. I think only James Ward-Prowse would be able to rival that kind of technique and quality. But I feel like that was so naive by Paulinho. You make that one bad tackle for that Harvey Elliott free kick and think, okay, we got away with it. Don't dive in. And when you watch it from the angle I had, he slid in, and it was just at the very moment he just lifted his legs up to make sure that he took out Jota. It just seemed like a really strange tackle. But I thought Liverpool were a decent value for that first goal at that stage. And it just seemed such a shame to have given it away so softly for that goal.
A bit of a moot point now, but like, did you not? I thought that first Paulinho tackle that was, yeah, to the one that Harvey Elliott hit into the wall, I thought that was a good tackle. I thought he got
not a foul.
I thought he got around him and got the ball. So, and I think that's why the Hammersmith end was fuming, is like, I think there was a bit of confusion about the second one, but I thought the first one was a perfectly fine challenge. And that's why then when the second one got given, I think everyone was just wound up by that point.
Yeah. So for that first tackle, for the Harvey Elliott free kick, he slid in such a way that he was sliding a bit longer than he normally would for a slide tackle. And only at the end of that tackle did he get the ball. So I think the angle that the ref had must have thought he'd gone through the player to get to the ball. It was a very weird sort of technique, but I can certainly appreciate why everyone got up in arms about it, because it really wasn't a foul. But that second one was a bad tackle, and we paid the price for it.
Yeah, and it forced Silva's hand into making a change. I mean, he was substituted on 71 minutes. There was an argument that Silva's changes came far too late in the game for us to make an impact and get back in the game, which I found a bit frustrating. A lot of people found quite frustrating. But yeah, Paulinho was restricted getting on a yellow card. And now I believe he's on 13 yellows for the season. If he gets two more in the next four games, he'll get a three-match ban, which may carry on to next season because of the way it works. And obviously, we missed Paulinho in the first couple of games of last season because he was injured against Everton. I think he came on against Brentford, maybe. So that wouldn't be very ideal. That being said, we don't know if he's going to be here or not, but let's just say he is. Some of his yellows, is a point we made last season, some of his yellows were just never yellow cards, but some very much are and were yellow cards. But the problem is, Paulinho gets booked so often that it does sort of restrict him in the last start stages of the games. And, you know, you run the risk of getting down to 10 men. You go down to 10 men against a side like Liverpool and they'll just tear you apart. But yeah, we had to bring him off just to for damage limitations. But I'm glad he obviously didn't get sent off. I'm amazed he's never been sent off for Fulham since he's been at the club. That being said, he's an amazing tackler of the ball. He just, like I said earlier, is a bit erratic yesterday.
Yeah, you lose a lot when he's on that yellow card. On his yellow card thing. So yeah, I think you are right, Jack, that if he hits 15, he'll get a three-match ban. And I don't see any reason why that won't continue into next season. I think it's actually really important he doesn't get a yellow against Palace now, because I think the most important game that Paulinho plays is Brentford. It's the most important game left in the rest of the season. Like, it's the big one. If he was suddenly, let's say he got a yellow card against Brentford and then he's on 14, I think you don't play him for City and Luton. The games don't mean much, and it's much more important to have Paulinho first game of next season than to have him for these two last games of the season. I don't know. I don't know if people agree, but I think you have to drop him in that just to protect him.
And it's not even dropping him because you know it's unacceptable to get these amount of yellow cards. It's just the importance of starting next season strongly. It's nothing like that. So yeah, these games, albeit, you know, we're playing City, who we could stop them from winning the title if we got something from them, like yesterday against Liverpool. But in the grand scheme of things, it's more important that we have Paulinho on match day one next season than playing against City and Luton. Completely correct.
That's obviously assuming that he stays with us, which is another question together. Anyway, we looked like we were going to be ending the first half 1-0 down, but then who else but Timmy Chestnut's popping up with his first goal for Fulham. A really, really tidy finish. Came out of nowhere. I mean, Avas, I felt it was very much out of the kind of flow of play. I didn't think we were particularly good for the goal. It was a welcome surprise. But, I mean, what a finish it was.
I wonder what the odds were on him scoring the first Fulham goal yesterday. That was one of some pretty good odds. But we hadn't really made much up until that point. I mean, Muniz had a half a chance where a ball fed into him and he took a bit too wide and hit it straight at Alisson. Didn't really have much going for us. And I think we were quite riled up at that point as fans leading up to that goal, because I think the ref was really, really playing into Liverpool's hands and we were getting really, really irritated with them. And even leading up to that goal, Muniz got completely wiped out by Robertson from behind before Iwobi collects the ball for the second part of that cross. And yeah, what a finish. He had such a tight little angle. Like you were saying in the quick take, there was like a postcard's worth the size of the goal to aim for in that corner. And even though Edo was on the line, couldn't stop it, it was brilliant. And it was so great to see another person on the squad getting onto the team and onto the score sheet, as it were. Because and that's why Marco's feathers in his cap is that he gets all the team scoring. It's not just like us relying on Mitro anymore. So yeah, and see him celebrating was brilliant too. So yeah, really, really happy for Chestnuts to get one for us.
Yeah, he really puts some extra relish on that celebration. You can see how much it means to him. And I was chatting with my dad. I've been so impressed with him as a player, how he's sort of made himself kind of a really integral part of this team. And to keep a player of the caliber of Kenny Tete out just speaks volumes for how consistent he's been. And he was rewarded with a goal. So we went in 1-1 and then things fell apart, Jack. It wasn't to be. There were two goals that we conceded, both of which, in my opinion, were, I think, caused by some, I'm hesitant to say errors, but sloppy bits of defending. The Gravenbach goal, Iwobi giving the ball away, I think, in a relatively unforgivable area, and then you see the quality. It was just posting in. Leno's not getting anywhere near it. But I think Iwobi as a whole hasn't been particularly good these last few games. And yesterday, Jack, he just really was not at the races, in my opinion.
No, two players and their performances, Iwobi and Tosin, that concern me a lot. And there's now a huge conversation walking out the ground about Tosin, and we can come onto that a bit later, I'm sure. But do you know what? This season, I've noticed that Fulham are really rubbish at clearing their lines under pressure. Against Arsenal, we cleared the ball and it wouldn't even go past the final third. And then they would pick the ball up and recycle the ball and go again. And the same thing happened again. It almost feels like when you're playing a team who constantly puts on pressure, but just put your fucking foot through the ball and clear the ball. The ball didn't go very far. And I noticed a lot of times we were trying to switch the play, and that's basically how we ended up giving the ball away. Iwobi gave the ball away and then they picked it up and grabbed it. But it's just such a tame goal to concede. For all three of Liverpool's goals were so easily avoidable. And look, they've got that quality. They can hit the ball from range and in off the post. Gravenberch is a good goal, but we just can't clear our lines sometimes. And it's fine, because obviously we're mid-table, it doesn't really matter. However, it's just something I've picked up on in the last, this whole season really. Just certain games where the ball is there to be cleared and we just can't put our foot through it. It doesn't go very far and it just lands at the feet of the opposition and they attack again and then they score or create another chance. It's very frustrating. However, it's another oh no anyway sort of game. So I'm not that fussed, but it is just frustrating, isn't it?
Just adding on to Jack's point, it reminds me of Man United's goal this season. It was a scrap in the box. We couldn't clear it. And Pellini just literally passed it to Bruno when all we had to do was put it in the air. And if you put it in the air, we would have got a point. And like Tosin yesterday, every other clearance he made was a missed kick straight to someone. who wasn't wearing white. And it was very, very frustrating. And for someone who's trying to show us that he's bigger than us and better than us and trying to be at that next level, the teams that he's making those mistakes against are those teams he wants to play for. So he's not really auditioning himself well to be picked by those teams. And if anything, he's playing himself into unemployment at the moment because his attitude stinks and his quality is not as good as I think even he thinks anymore. And so are we really keen to give him six figures a week when he's performing like this, when he should be trying to prove himself even more, even if it's not for our sake? It's a very strange scenario for Tosin at the moment, as Jack says, we'll probably get onto a bit later. But like, I think he's turning fans off him a lot based on the contract issues and how he's not really performing to try and justify that attitude. So for him, amongst many players this summer, it's going to be very interesting how Fulham handle them.
I think it's a very interesting point, Bas, and I had the same thought myself in that with these performances, I mean, there was so much sloppy defending. The goal, obviously, very, very weak challenge on Gakpo, which I think released Jota, yeah, who then went on to score. I mean, his stock is dropping, you know. I think it's a very valid point. And Sammy, like, what's your general feeling about Tosin in this side at the minute? Because I've even seen a few calls for Defujirol to come in and play, because it's becoming more and more clear that he doesn't want to be here and he's more than likely going to be out the door, and the performances don't warrant the starts in many people's eyes. But I'd just be interested to hear your take on it.
Well, I agreed with what Dan said on last week's post West Ham podcast, where he's like, at this moment in time, like, playing Tosin is the best thing for us, because like, the best case scenario is still keeping Tosin, and dropping him now is basically Fulham saying he is gone. So unless he is 100% like agreed a move to another club or whatever, I think dropping him at this stage because he might go seems counterintuitive. And I still believe that the Tosin Bassey partnership is the best partnership that we have. And like, you know, I think we all remember, I think it might have been the Villa game when it was Ream and Diop, and we're like, that axis does not work. I am relatively interested to see a Diop Bassey partnership. It's the one partnership that we haven't really seen this season, and in theory, it should or could work. Diop can play on that right hand side and has been good, but also it is prone to the same kind of mistakes. It's like we have like the same defender. Like, Diop makes mistakes, so does Tosin. On their day, Tosin and Bassey, you almost can't beat it. And you know, United away was a great example where those two just absolutely dominated. Same with Spurs, they didn't have a sniff. But I do just, Tosin's just mistakes just seem to be just happening every single week. Even sometimes they're not punished as goals. I mean, there was quite a funny meme that was posted a couple of weeks ago where it was like Calvin Bassey on one side, and he was like, "All right, Tosin, let's keep this calm, let's keep this tight." And then it's just a picture of Tosin saying, "Nah, let's do some defending." And it's the most apt meme I've ever seen. Tosin just like once every half thinks, "I'm just going to give it to their best player. Let's see if we can get ourselves out of this hole." You're just like, could we not? Could you just boot it into touch, please? That would be great.
I find it bizarre. I like Tosin. He's given a lot to us, and he's a good player. But I think there's a lot of arrogance about him. He hasn't committed his future. He's basically had this contract debacle going on all season. He's still not signed it. His brothers then got involved on Twitter, and that's fine, you know. However, the mistakes he's making, it doesn't justify him to get a move to a bigger club whatsoever. If anything, it justifies him to get dropped from this current side.
But he knows, doesn't he, that he's like, because he's homegrown, because he's English, and because he's going to go on a free, that like a bigger club will just take him because he's a good squad option. But
that's fine. There's a good squad option, but then he won't play any football. So he's basically downgrading himself for the sake of just being at a bigger club and getting more money. And this is a player who has ambitions to play for England. You know, he still thinks that he's good enough to play for England, and fair enough. You know, if you think that, that's fine. And I think that maybe if he did improve, he's worth a shout. But he's not doing himself any favours. You know, get Sheffield United, gave the ball away, they scored. Yesterday, same thing. It's honestly, for a player who's so set on not wanting to be here next season and going to another club, the performances he's putting in is poor. And to be fair, Marco Silva's a manager who you know prides himself on respect and stuff like that. But if he's not committing his future, why should he play the next four games? Why can't Diop play and a player under contract and then he says, well, look, I'm going to be here. You haven't put me in the squad. Play me instead of Tosin. Tosin hasn't even committed his future. Honestly, I don't want to bash a player because I don't like doing that. But Tosin for me, and then he arguing with Pereira yesterday on the pitch. He was having a go at Pereira. Arrogance. I don't like it. He needs to up his game.
I mean, obviously, playing devil's advocate, we don't know what's going on fully behind the scenes and could be discussions happening. And you know, we could very well see Tosin with us next season. But yeah, there's a lot of unanswered questions there, for sure, for sure. Before we wrap up the analysis of the game in this part one, Sammy, were there any standout performances for you? I thought Muniz, once again, proving his worth, hold up play excellent. I know you were quite fond of his display, and we very nearly had another overhead kick to boot as well, which would have been...
Oh, that was the worst thing that Tosin did yesterday.
Best bit of defending he did all game.
Oh, he got in the bloody way. It was going top corner.
That was going
Oh my God, he got the cleanest connection on it. Yeah, Muniz was great yesterday. I mentioned it on the quick take that I just thought he was fantastic, and that despite him like actually not getting goals recently, his overall performances are now actually what I think is keeping him in the team. He doesn't need goals. If he's going to bring the rest of the team in the way he is, his hold-up play is borderline Mitrovic levels at points yesterday. The thing sometimes with Muniz is he can go missing for like 30 minutes, but then so did Mitro. Like we all like love to have like rose tinted glasses about Mitrovic. Like he went missing too. So I don't think that's the greatest crime. Other stand-up good performances. I thought that Bobby did a decent job yesterday. You know, he's also got to watch Alexander Arnold, but every time he got the ball, I thought he was fairly neat and tidy. We missed Willian, but at the same time, I thought just Bobby always just gives 100%, doesn't he? And so I enjoyed him in the middle. And I thought Sasa Lukic was good at points, but like I think also like I think he faded towards the end of the game, but it was a real battle in there. It was a difficult day out for Sasa Lukic. But yeah, once again, I thought he was pretty good most of the game as well. But yeah, Muniz for me, if there was a Fulham man of the match yesterday, it was definitely him.
I thought Calvin Bassey was also excellent at times. I think his performance was part of the reason why the scoreline was only kept to three. So just a quick shout out to Calvin Bassey, who was putting another very, very solid performance in my opinion. Ivas, just looking ahead to the Crystal Palace game quickly. Obviously, we'll cover it in more depth on the Thursday club. But how are you feeling going into that game? They obviously absolutely walloped West Ham 5-2, obviously beat Liverpool before that. So they're hitting a bit of a purple patch. So it's not the best time to play it. Somewhat ironically, it's the game before our Fulhamish live show. So we're obviously hoping for a win for those reasons. But yeah, how do you expect to see us line up? What are your thoughts going into this just very quickly?
Well, going into that game, but like before this last couple of games, you think, oh, that's a game where we should take 3 points. But they've played the two teams that we've just played, Liverpool and West Ham, and they've got six out of that. They've scored, six goals as well. I mean, they can't keep clean sheets at home against West Ham like we can when we score five. But they smashing five against them is it's no mean feat. So it's an interesting game because we're on, you know, standard, inconsistent form, and they're coming into some purple patch form. But West Ham were knackered from that Thursday game. So you can put a little bit of an asterisk against that, but it's going to be an interesting game. In terms of the lineup, I do think that if he's fit, Willian walks back into that left wing position. I think we'll probably sort of spruce up the midfield. I don't know whether Lukic plays another game if he's a little bit absent in that game. And obviously, we're talking about Tosin. I can't imagine him being dropped given what we're talking about contracts and everything. So I think there'll be a very similar lineup, but I think we'll have a lot more of the ball. I think we'll be a bit more aggressive because we were a bit passive yesterday and showed a bit too much respect to Liverpool, like Jack was saying. So I think it'll be a bit more of us dominating, hopefully. And if we can be a bit clinical in that first 15-20, then I think there's no reason why we can't get 3 points.
I actually bet my entire house, mortgage, the car, the dog, everything on that game being a draw. It is the most draw game I've ever seen in the Premier League. It's almost like I'm going to get done for insider trading here, because it's just the most, like, it's, there is nothing else that's going to happen on Saturday other than that being a draw.
Yeah, it was a nil-nil thriller away from home, wasn't it? A couple of months ago, a fair few months ago. So more of the same, more than likely.
I have to say, I was incredibly impressed with Crystal Palace yesterday. I watched the highlights, and when they've got Elise and Eze on the pitch, they absolutely purr. They're the best, one of the best duo to watch in the Premier League. Those two are incredible. Oliver Glasner has obviously got this first away win against Liverpool, and now they just absolutely went to town on West Ham. And it's fair enough, West Ham were quite vulnerable. They just went out of Europe, but the passing move for that first goal was absolutely exquisite. I know I'm a massive Fulham fan, obviously, but I cannot wait to watch Eze and Elise next week. They're just wonderful to watch.
Yeah, I can't wait to watch them in that thrilling 0-0 draw that's incoming.
3-3.
We'll have to see. I'd take a 3-3. That would be fun. Anyway, that'll do for part one. Don't go anywhere, because we'll be back with some of your questions.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Welcome back. It's the Fulhamish Podcast. George here. I'm joined by Sammy, Avas and JK. Before we get stuck in, the final remaining tickets for the live show are available via the link in the description. That's on Saturday, the 27th of April, after the Crystal Palace at home game at the iconic Half Moon Putney. We will be joined by legendary football journalist Paddy Barclay. It's going to be a wonderful afternoon. Do make sure, if you want to come, you get your ticket ASAP, because there's only 7 available. So if you're listening to this and you're thinking, oh, I'll leave it to the last minute, I'll get one on the door, do not, because you will be disappointed. So do.
I've got a special guest announcement.
Oh, yeah?
P. Rutz, the Rutzler himself, this morning sent me a text to say he's going to be there.
There we go. So we've got Paddy Barclay and P. Ridley. It's probably not the best nickname to give him at this moment. Peter Rutzlow, legendary athletic journalist.
I'll call him that.
So, yeah, you do not want to miss it. Also, P. Rutz is so funny on the live show, because you can see his live reaction to This Will Catch On's, and it's quite something to behold, you know. So, yeah, sorry, Peter. I retract that nickname. But do get your tickets. Links in the description. It should be a really fun night. So, moving on. Sammy, we've got a question here from Black, White and Fred, who asks, can I restart the Leno debate? Have to think yesterday that he should probably do better with the first and third goals. Trent is always going top bins and he's got nowhere near it. And the third just goes under him. Am I being harsh, or did he just set the bar too high last season? Now, I think the statement, Trent's always going to put it top bins, is quite good, because it's like, I doubt there are many keepers on the planet who are getting over there. Maybe prime Gianluigi Buffon may have got somewhere near it. But personally, Black, White and Fred, I think that it's a little bit harsh to throw any criticism for him for the first goal. However, the third goal, I could kind of see where you're coming from. I mean, Jota hits it hard, low, but you could argue it does just squirm underneath him. I thought overall, personally, Leno had a really solid game. I thought he looked confident. There were loads of chances that Liverpool had that he just managed to cling on to, or he'd scoop up the rebound very quickly. And he gave sort of goalkeeping performance that gives your back line confidence. You think, okay, Leno's on it. He wasn't making too many mistakes. But I can see where you're coming from with the third goal, that perhaps he could have done better. However, I would caveat that massively, where I think he earned more than enough credit in the bank for his performance for the rest of the game. Sammy, where do you stand on this? Because there have been a few people who've pointed out Leno's performances of late. I personally don't think it's there's too much in it, but I'm just wondering if you think any different.
No, it's reasonable. Actually, it's the way that Black, White and Fred said that. I mean, you think about Fabian Barthez against Roberto Carlos all those years ago. It was obvious that Roberto Carlos was going to bang that one top corner. And actually, you know, David James against Ronaldo in when he scored that free kick. It was obvious he was going in the top corner. Why don't we just stand in the top corner? That's how to do it. It's easy. Look, I'm joking. I get like the third goal isn't great. I'm not having any slating about the first. That's just the most outrageous free kick. He gets it over the wall. It's literally postage stamp stuff. It's not amazing, but like, are we going to go Marek Rodak? That's such a seismic shift. It's not reached that level yet. And I still don't think it's anywhere near that level of bringing in Marek yet. As much as I like Marek, I think he deserves first team football somewhere. He'd have done a much better job in goal for Burnley this season if they'd have gone for him over someone like Muric and James Trafford. But no, it's Burnley goal. I think he deserves to have the pressure. And I'm sure Marco will say, look, Marek's done very well in training, but it's nowhere near dropping him levels for me.
Mm. No, I would have to agree. Anyone else?
I find it annoying when, especially a goalkeeper makes one error, two error, three error, that's fine. And then there's this clamour for change. It's like a manager, you know, you lose three games of the bounce. And the threshold for clamour, the threshold for people to be like, we have to change something, it's so low in football these days. It's incredibly boring. Leno is the best keeper we've had since Schwarzer, maybe Areola as well. Areola's doing fantastically well at West Ham when he's playing for them. It's just so boring. Leno makes one error. So what? Keepers make errors. So, like, imagine you were a Blackburn Rovers fan. You saw Pears do what he did yesterday. That's the sort of error that would probably get you dropped. Leno is a phenomenal keeper. He came in when we got promoted from Arsenal. We knew how good he was. He's been amazing, honestly.
When you consider what a keeper does, you claim balls in the air, make sharp saves, reflexes, whatever. There's never been a stage when we're nervous that he's going to go get the ball or if he's going to save something. He's like that first game of the season against Everton, he earned us 3 points. As much as we scored a goal and won the game, he earned us those 3 points. And although you can say about credit in the bank and is he wearing that away, the reality is like goalkeeper mistakes are highlighted so much more than, you know, Munez not scoring a goal, for example, or Willian's cross going into the stands. And as Jack says, it's so incredibly harsh to, you know, one mistake that really doesn't impact the game in the sense that it didn't cost us the game. We weren't really in the game to have lost it. And like, I've never had any worries about him making a mistake that's going to lead to a goal or drop something or should have saved that. It happens, part of the game. And if you drop everyone for mistakes, we're going to have 11 changes per game, per week.
I find it frustrating as well when the threshold for goalkeepers, if he'd have saved that Jota shot, everyone's saying, oh, that's an outstanding world-class save, probably, if he manages to tip that round the post. But when he doesn't save it, suddenly it's like, should have he done better? Should have he made a world-class save? Maybe. But like, I don't know. It seems like it's either world-class or should have done better. Surely there's got to be somewhere in between where occasionally he might concede goals that frankly, like he might concede, you know, as you say, you saw that, mistake that I think, is it Sam Johnson, the Palace keeper? Johnson, definitely.
Oh,
Dean Henderson.
Yeah, yesterday. Yeah.
I mean, that's the kind of mistake that you should be dropped for. Yeah. Not just making a save that you could have if he'd have been absolutely perfect made.
And then, like, we went 1-0 down, and then Gakpo cuts in, and it's a very good save from that shot. It's a very good save from Bernd Leno. I'd
say that was world class, that save against Gakpo.
Yes.
And I think if you concede at that point, you know, 8 minutes after we'd gone 1-0 down, then it's curtains and it could have been a cricket score. I think that save was really, really important to keep us in. I know ultimately it didn't come into anything, but I think that was a world-class save from Bernd Leno.
And even the second goal the other day, hit comes off the post. So again, it's going to be a world-class save to stop that from going in. So there's not much more he can do with those first two goals. And you can say he can do better with the thirds, but you know, shit happens.
These like whisper it quietly takes, hot takes about like, should a world-class, a very good player be dropped because of just a couple of mistakes? It's so fucking boring. I'm sorry.
Tell us how you really feel, Jack. Anyway, moving on. We've got another question here from Mike Levy. I'm going to throw this one to you, Avas. He says, given his age and injury history, how best do we use TC? He had a run of starts that included the 2-5-0 victories and his coming off at Newcastle lost us the midfield battle. However, he's such a useful sub, i.e. Sheffield, and I'd even argue Liverpool yesterday. He did look good when he came on, you know, and that's what TC can do. And there's a lot of, I feel like it sort of splits the fan base 50-50 on whether TC should be starting or whether he should be utilised as this kind of super sub. I personally don't really know where I'd lie on this side of the debate. I think there are certain teams that the way that they set up, often teams who kind of like are happy to sit back and invite the pressure. I feel like those games are more suited to TC starting because he can just unlock those kind of, those sort of stagnant defensive lines. But what do you think? There's a lot of factors. Obviously, he's in the sort of twilight of his career right now. How do you think TC is best utilised the best?
I think it depends on the team that we play and the tactics, like you're saying, because he's brilliant on the ball. He unlocks defences. He's got a great eye. When he combines with Willian and Robertson on that left, it's hard for people to defend because they're so fluid. They know each other's positioning in games so well. I think it's those games in which we need to get our foot in and get to grips with it. That he sometimes leaves things a bit open, doesn't track back and doesn't have that energy going backwards that we sometimes need, which is probably where Lukic has probably leapfrogged him slightly. But when he comes on, he's classy. He's got that vision. And you know, whether he starts or whether he comes off the bench, whisper it quietly, Jack. He's pretty good. It's hard to really like have consistency with the midfield because it's all depending on what tactics we're playing and who we're playing. So I'm just happy he's in the squad. I think that wherever he plays, starting or on the bench, he contributes really well. So I don't think it has to be a pigeonholed starter sub coming off the bench. I think it's all circumstantial.
No, I feel that's a very well-rounded take of us. We got another question regarding another central midfielder of ours from Matt Wall. And this one's on Harrison Reed. Jack, I'm going to throw this one to you because I thought it was quite interesting. Harrison Reed doesn't really get a look in anymore, says Matt. Is this the end of his time at the club? Now, it was obviously quite a leap to make. However, I did think with Polina coming off, that Harrison Reed perhaps would have been the obvious choice to bring on just with the sort of his terrier-like tackling abilities and with the press and whatnot. What do you think? I thought it was quite interesting. We haven't seen him feature for a little while now. And with the player of his quality, you've got to kind of think, maybe is he going to be thinking, right, am I out? Silver's favouring Lukic. What's your take on this?
It's really difficult. I've got, you know, sentimental feelings in football are very strong. And obviously Harrison Reed was part of our three-man midfield last season. We were so good. Paulinho, Reed, Pereira, job done, easy. However, you know, I was really concerned when Lukic came in last season. He wasn't really getting a look in. And obviously he was very new to the Premier League. And I asked Marco, is Lukic going to be a part of this team next season? And he said, yeah, absolutely, 100%. And the thing is, when Lukic has been called upon, apart from, okay, after Chelsea away, where I thought the heads were gone with Lukic, you know, he came on, he was terrible. And I was like, that could be that for Lukic. I know the question is about Reed, but I'll get onto it. Then Lukic steps up and he plays really well against Man United, Brighton, Spurs. And that literally, we were all sold on him. And the problem is, Harrison Reed is so difficult because he can play in that eight. He can advance forward. He gets wide in areas when we attack. I think it's just a flip of a coin. It's would you rather have Lukic or Reed? And right now, Lukic is just on better form than Harrison Reed. And there was rumours in January that Wolves are interested in Reed and Everton were interested in Reed. And he's reaching that age where he might want to play more regular first team football. It's a shame because he played so much last season. He helped us get promoted as well. He's like, honestly, the contribution he's made to this club has been unbelievable. But sometimes new players come in and they just hit the ground running. And I know Lukic obviously didn't hit it, but he started to hit the ground running. And I don't know. This is a really difficult question because Do we want to progress and upgrade the midfield in the summer? Yes. What does that mean for the likes of Harrison Reed? What does that mean for the likes of Sasha Lukic? It's just one of those things that we're like, we have to put sentimental feelings aside and just be like, do we want to progress as a club? Yes. Therefore, players like Reed and Lukic might not play as much football next season. And it could mean that Harrison Reed has to move on, which is so sad because he's a phenomenal player and a great professional. And it's just part and parcel of football.
There's a concept in NFL when you're upgrading your squad and it's called raising the floor. And the idea is that if your depth is better than it was last year, then your starters will be even better and creates even stronger competition. I think we're getting to that stage with players like Reese where should our depth be better? Should our depth be more consistent, be more capable of the mid-table challenge or, you know, European spots that we're trying to go after? And I felt like a couple of times when Reed's come on, fair enough coming off the bench, he seems like the game's passing by and he's sort of running after the ball rather than affecting the ball, affecting the game. I don't feel like he's quite found his mojo in a particular position this season where he did last season. And I think with Jack saying, with Lukic sort of emerging himself the second half of the season, he's lower in the pecking order. And I think unexpectedly, I would be a bit surprised if he is here come August. But I think as Jack is saying, I think he deserves to have that starting 11 berth or at least be properly, you know, in contention for starting in another team probably.
I think like in an absolutely ideal world, if Harrison Reed was a robot and not a human being and we could just keep him on the bench for next season, amazing. But Harrison Reed is a professional and he wants to play every week and I just don't think he's going to settle for that. I think he's a great depth option. Wow, yeah, if we could just keep Harrison Reed as our depth option forever, like what a wonderful world to be in. But that's literally not how like professional sports works, and he will go. I'm certain of it. Like he is one of those players who will just want a new challenge somewhere because it's not worked this season. He knows he's good enough. He's on the bloody cusp of this England because he's in this one position where actually he could get in because it's the kind of one place where England doesn't have that much depth. I'm not saying he will, but he could if in theory, you know, a new move went well. I just think sadly he will go and he'll go with everyone's best wishes and we'll always welcome him warmly. But I just think he's going to want a new challenge.
There was a point a couple of weeks ago, given his sort of absences from the side and the squad, that I thought that he packed it all in and decided to run the length of Africa. Ginger man from Worthing. God, he's grown a bit of a beard and let his hair go long, but is that Harrison Reed? Alas, no. I echo that.
What a geezer.
What a geezer.
Yeah,
what
he's
geezer.
Our hardest geezer.
He's got the stamina as well.
It's a shame. It's a shame because he honestly, the way football works, you're not going to last forever in one team. And he was so good at Southampton and he was making good progress at Southampton. He won a new challenge. He was really good under Parker, really good under Silva in the Championship, really good last season. But, you know, these things do. Nothing lasts forever in football and it's very sad, but he will be forever Fulham.
Absolutely. One last question before we wrap up today. I thought this was quite good fun. Obviously, following the Everton-Nottingham Forest controversy in which Ashley Young very nearly gave away three penalties. I mean, I've seen the replays. I think every single one of them was a penalty personally. Nottingham Forest, the official Nottingham Forest Twitter account released a statement saying that they'd warned the Premier League that the VAR for that game was a Luton fan and that this would be coming. It was absolutely mind-blowing statement and I'm sure it's not the last that we'll hear of it. The Owen asks, would Fulham ever dare release a statement like Forest did? If so, what would be the reason? Has anyone got any thoughts on this one?
I was thinking we could have done it after the three red cards against United in the FA Cup last season.
Yeah. We warned the Premier League that Sean Kavanagh is an absolute dilbert, and yet they continued to appoint him for the game. Yeah, what would have been the big... That's probably the one that springs to mind most, the FA Cup.
If Marco had got hold of the Twitter account, if somehow the admin like left the phone somewhere and Marco saw that and he saw Fulham FC Twitter account, I don't mind if I do, then maybe we could have definitely reached that level. I think actually generally if Marco ran the Twitter, would be fun. Would be a lot of head loss, but a lot of fun.
It'd sort of be similar to, you know, how somebody of that status, like, I'm not comparing Marco to Trump at all, but you got the president of the United States who's just let loose on Twitter, and he just is sort of documenting every single headlock and crazy take that he's ever had. It would be quite fun to capture that essence in the heat of the moment. I think there's not a single Premier League manager who's got Twitter, is there? And I think for exactly this reason is, emotions run a little high, shall we say. Anyway,
I think we learned that lesson with our DOF doing that, when Tony Khan used to go rampaging on Twitter back in the day. So I think we've had our version of that before.
Yeah, we have.
Now it's just well done to Fulham fans for attending. Insert ground here for our brilliant 3 points at against insert team, which probably actually I called for at the time. I'm glad that that is just the case.
In all seriousness, yesterday was a really, really bad day for football. Really bad. And it really questions the love of the game from a lot of people in all aspects.
Yeah, it says a lot that I'm way more angry about Coventry City's offside than I am about Fulham today. I'm livid.
I'd lost interest in the Fulham game, so I was watching it on my phone, and basically our whole row was basically watching this Coventry game unfold, and we were absolutely up in arms with that offside decision.
Yeah, it was quite a funny moment because I saw it was keeping track of the score, and I was thinking at that point we were 3-1 down. I was like, I would much rather be watching this game right now. But anyway, that'll do for today.
More old Coventry.
Before we go, Avas, would you like to pick your favourite 3-word review to name this?
Yeah, I'm struggling between two. Tossing and turning and chestnuts and roasted. What does everyone think between those two?
Oh, I like chestnuts and roasted.
Tossing and turning. Oh, George, you got a final vote here, George.
Let's go for the chestnuts.
Oh no, don't know. It was three against one. You can't go for chestnuts. You got to back the popular.
Yeah, I think it's the more positive of the two. So I'm changing my mind.
Yeah, that's true.
Cool. Chestnuts and roasted. Well done, TJ.
Well done, TJ. Thanks very much for getting in touch. And thank you very much for listening to this episode of Fulhamish. We'll be back on Thursday, but until then, have a great week. Sammy, thank you very much.
Pleasure.
Thank you, JK.
Yeah, lunchtime. Thank you very much for having me.
A vast pleasure as always, mate.
Thanks for having me. Catch you guys later.
You wait.